What's happening, everybody? Hope y'all are staying safe out there and not going too insane and or eating all the peanut butter in the house because you smoked all your weed and or drank all the booze in the house. Today's guest is drummer Dave Bland of Full of Hell and Jarhead Fertilizer. We get into some noise improv, Mr. Bungle, his drumming influences, seeing Trap Them Live and some of the insane stories associated with the band, and taking drum lessons with Travis Orban of Darkest Hour. And while I'd usually give it a shout out to my sponsor, New Orleans Record Press, who is open and taking orders, I'd like to give a shout out especially to my brothers in Brooklyn's own St. Vitus Bar, who have a Kickstarter presently to help them with bills and staff during these uncertain times. And I included a link in the description of this episode if you're interested in donating. And if not St. Vitus, please do buy merch, buy songs, preferably from Bandcamp, to my understanding, or take online lessons, etc., from your favorite touring musicians, as they're being hit pretty damn hard as of late. And if not St. Vitus specifically, there's no shortage of people in the service industry and or bars and or restaurants that are also in need, so do check, and if you can, please do donate. So wishing the best of luck to all that are being affected. If you like what you hear, Crash Bang Boom Podcast can be found on iTunes Podcast, my SoundCloud and YouTube pages, Stitcher, Luminary, Google Play, Podbean, and more. Feel free to check out any of the previous 170-plus episodes. Give me a like, a subscription, a positive rating, and or a glowing review. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook as well for additional content and or updates. So here we go without further ado, Dave Bland, Full of Hell, Crash Bang Boom.
Crowds go mad with joy.
All right, Dave Bland of Full of Hell and some other projects that I'm curious to hear about. What's going on, man? How are you doing? How's this coronavirus shit treating you?
What's up? I'm doing great. Making it through, you know, workless, not on tour. It's fine with me. It's the only time I can stay in my house, and it's okay too, you know. But besides that, I really wish I was on tour, yeah.
I hear you. Did this disrupt any tours that were going to happen or were in the process of happening and or recording projects, et cetera? Did that throw a wrench into any works?
So, we were supposed to be in Europe right now. But, since obviously the COVID-19, everything is shut down. So who knows when we'll be able to actually fulfill that tour. But hopefully we'll be able to do it in the fall. Other than that, I've just been like practicing tons. That's basically it through this. 5 hours a day almost now, it seems like.
But really?
Yeah, I have a practice space at least at my house, so it makes it really convenient during this time, you know.
I'll say. That's killer. Are you practicing like concepts in particular, speed drills, hand drills? What have you been kind of going over, or are you prepping yourself, keeping yourself accustomed and familiar with your band's parts, or what are you going over?
I'm going over a lot of my band's parts, but also a lot of, you know, speed techniques. I've been trying to get faster, and it's definitely nice having this time to really like invest in controlling some of the stuff that I don't know, and tweaking some things that I think that I've needed to over the years. There's a lot of speed techniques now, at least a lot of double bass stuff that I haven't. I really didn't start playing double bass until like 3 years ago or so.
Wow. Damn.
Before that, with Full of Hell, everything was single bass, and I was kind of like anti-double bass a little bit, which kind of helped my chops in a lot of ways.
Right.
Made things more interesting, but adding a second kick, it's definitely more challenging, and I like it a lot better. Overall, the fills and everything is a lot nicer with double bass, so I've really, really taken a lot of time to work on that. Just getting cleaner with double bass, you know, and taking it down really to like slow levels just to like to get my power, because I really like being a powerful player at least.
Right.
And tons of double bass exercises. Also been kind of cracking back at books and stuff like that. I don't know, Virgil Bonatti, he has a crazy book, and that shit is the hardest drumming I think that I've tried, just because it's so weird, you know,
odd
time signatures and stuff. But besides that, main, very much just working just hours a day with a metronome, you know.
Right. Wow, man. Well, that's, you're fortunate that you have the access to your kit and can dedicate that much time to it. I mean, all of those stars aligning while you're being forced to stay at home sounds like it's a bit of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, and there was a lot of my life where I was like kind of just, you know, whatever, just screwing off and not practicing like I should be, you know, and really only like practicing like once or twice a week, where now I'm definitely, something's changed where I really, really just want to practice every day. I feel like even if I miss a day, it just kind of feels like off when I get back on the kit nowadays, you know? So
right.
It's been fortunate and this has kind of opened my eyes a little bit to practicing more, especially all the time I have in my hands.
Absolutely, man. You know, I enjoy talking to musicians that play pretty extreme music. I would say you certainly do, given the BPMs and just full-on ferocity and amount of notes going down in a Full of Hell set. So tell me a little bit about some of the ergonomic adjustments that you've made, be it in hand technique, et cetera, to minimize everything from inflammation to just pain and or exhaustion. Because I've noticed that this level, the faster the stuff gets, the more important the setup gets. And I mean, by setup, that's everything from the seat height to your cymbal height, the ratio in between that, where your tom snare and then, you know, pedal action, size of sticks, everything becomes more and more specific, I feel like, the faster and faster this stuff gets. So tell me a little bit about your journey of stumbling through this shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always played small kits. That was like my thing. And I really like stood by it. And I would only use single bass at first, but now converting to double bass the last few years, and the last couple albums, it's really opened doors to a lot of things, but I've definitely, my hand technique I've been working on, especially because I had a teacher, at least my teacher was, you know, super into Mike Mangini. So his technique to me is that's the, you know, open fingers between the pointed finger and the thumb. But also in a way, kind of, I've been doing the John Long stretch, like we're making a little bit of French grips, like slightly into the Mike Mangini technique, which that really, I mean, for me, I have like a swing with my blast beats. Like the only way I can really blast beat, I don't know, I'm kind of like accenting in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tweaked a lot of things on my setup, especially because I was only one rack tom, one floor tom, one bass drum, whereas now I'm two bass drums and two rack toms and a floor tom and
right.
three crashes, whereas I only use a crash and a ride. So I've added a lot of cymbals and stuff, and especially as things get a little bit more metal for us, I've added a lot of stuff. But now I think we'll take an even weirder direction. So my setup is definitely going to be tweaked. I'm thinking of adding a lot more effects, cymbals, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, other than that, my hand technique, I've definitely really had to keep under control, because when we play, I kind of go animalistic, and it's very easy for me to break out of form.
Sure.
Hurting myself wise, I really don't ever have any hand pains. I know I get a lot of comments that I have carpal tunnel technique.
Oh, wow.
But I have like I have a pretty high seat. I feel like a lot of it comes from my lats, not so much my arms, where my arms do kind of look like they're just mainly moving, but I definitely feel like more of like a back movement out of it. Where I've kind of learned to keep it that way, at least.
Right.
But control is something that I've been teaching myself, because it's really easy for me to like tense up and get frantic. Whereas, you know, to take a breath sometimes is definitely the way to do it.
Right.
I've learned that over the time. As our set gets longer, especially, I've learned that over time.
Yeah, you mentioned breathing. It's one of those things. I'm going on 30 years. Next year will be 30 years of playing drums. And breathing is one of the things that was absolutely not natural to me. And in doing so, just like if you're doing particular exercises and stuff, if you're not breathing correctly, your muscles need oxygen, your lungs, everything needs oxygen. And I was finding that I was seizing up. My hands would kind of freeze up. I've heard people call it like it feels like you're wearing oven mitts, or you have like cement in your hands.
Yeah.
And I've definitely experienced a lot of that. And it is hard, especially I imagine playing as extreme music as you play, as I was saying earlier, and trying to find a balance of kind of conveying the intensity and the chaos, but still remaining cool and being able to breathe through that. I mean, is that something that you've had to figure out?
Yes, especially because I mean, you always play like an insanely hot show sometimes in the summertime where it's like you don't have the option to breathe. And when you like just I have a really bad tendency even at those shows to just like boom, just like completely go overboard, use all my energy and end up like throwing up or overheating, or like the last few songs I'll have to like go in another room for like 10 seconds and then walk back out and everybody's like but I mean breathing exercises I've had to really teach myself kind of control. It's definitely a control thing, but also at home to not get so lazy and to, you know, I've been throwing a lot of working out while I've been home into my, you know, drum routine, at least, you know, a lot of weightlifting, but also, you know, weird boxing exercises and stretching a ton. Stretching, I find nowadays is better than warming up. In my opinion, I'd either have like 10 minutes of warming up and like an hour and a half of stretching rather than, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, I've always joked that my way of warming up and not really stretching very much, which is also something that I've been reconsidering as of late, is just more me like nervously pacing the club playing rudiments on my thigh while I'm like trying to postpone drinking a fucking beer or two or three prior to the show. So I'm like, my warm up regimen or whatever you would call it has not exactly been the best. So I'm trying to fine tune that shit myself.
I used to be anti-warm-up, just completely, just, like, go right into it, like, you know, fresh and no, not worrying about it. I learned that I end up, you know, I'm a lot better if I warm up. It's just, there's no which way about it. Some people I know, though, they're just like, no, I don't want to warm up, and they go and they kill it. And I'm like, that's awesome. But for me, there's no way that, like, I need to. And plus, it's me just being nervous for the most part. I'm nervously just, like, walking, stretching.
Right.
You know, practice pad. And that's my routine for 2 hours beforehand.
Totally. I mean, there's certainly consistency and personality type that veers towards playing this instrument. If I've noticed any correlation over the course of 175 plus episodes, it's definitely that. And most of it are very high energy people that need that sort of cathartic outlet. And then they just get hooked to it and it kind of becomes almost part of your whole fucking existence, you know? So.
Yeah, no, and it's weird. It's like drummers have like an attitude, and it's so weird how like drummers are so similar in odd ways. It's definitely a cool thing.
Right. Generally, I would say pretty high energy levels and borderline anxiety.
Yes. I know a lot of anxious drummers, but for me, I'm pretty calm for the most part. I have my anxious moments, but I'm definitely the calm one of the band, where just like, huh, I laugh it off, like, oh, well, everything, something bad happens, I'm just like, okay, whatever.
That's amazing, man. Well, tell me about any gigs in particular that you might recall where maybe either were sort of rough getting through physically, or just weird audiences or equipment meltdowns. I know that you'll have a lot of like noisy stuff happening in y'all, and like you know, samples and whatnot. Not that the song is fully dependent on the timing of those samples, but I don't know, just tell me about some of the more bizarre shows, I guess, that you've played, if you can think of any.
I mean, I've got tons of like, you know, mishap stories. At least like, I remember one time where I was so ridiculously sick, but I'm still gonna play. I was like, I need to play, but the worst stomach virus I ever had. And I remember we were in like a blizzard. It was in Pennsylvania. It was like knee high snow. I ended up like getting out to throw up. Had to like change on the side of the road. All these truckers were beeping at me, and everybody's laughing and making fun of me. But I had like 9 hours of hell before the show, and I still had to play. But I had this little bucket where I would throw up every between songs, and everybody was stoked. We got through like 7 songs still. And I was just like annihilated by the end of it, just throwing them nonstop. But I was just dry heaving at that point, you know.
Oh, dude. But,
yeah, I know a lot of people that are just like cancel on that, you know, and just be like, yeah, I'm not gonna play. But I'm definitely happy of, you know, weathered the storm on that one.
Oh my god, dude! The fact that you should have been hooked up to an IV drip and been drinking Gatorade in between those pukes, just so you didn't completely fucking dehydrate yourself. That's crazy. And was it a hot gig on top of that?
It wasn't too hot. It was like the middle of winter, which was at least a little nice, you know. But it was in this like this is like so many years ago in like this gymnasium, the last day of tour. I was like, oh man, I just don't want to play. Like, it's just like, just go home, you know? But they're like, no, you got to play. I was like, all right.
Wow, man. So one, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about playing in Brooklyn, because I mean, there's videos dating back 6 years plus of y'all playing at St. Vitus Bar, one more recently at the Brooklyn Bazaar. Rest in peace, Brooklyn Bazaar, no longer around, unfortunately.
I know, cool venue.
Yeah, man. Tell me a little bit about just coming to Brooklyn. I feel as though, as far as I could tell, it seems as though Brooklyn has embraced y'all for quite some time.
Yeah, we've played New York a shit ton of times, and we're not so far, which makes it easy. So we've been able to do a lot of one-off shows where it's like, because it's from where we live, it's 5 hours to New York.
Right.
So Brooklyn has always just been amazing for us to do shows in, and it's definitely over the. It's definitely been nice, because especially St. Vitus, St. Vitus is probably like the first shows we played where we're like, holy shit, and bands like, I don't know, a lot of cool shows that we've played just at St. Vitus, like Despise You, Phobia. Mm-hmm. I remember those being like the first shows where we were just really like, whoa, this is insane. But Brooklyn's always been amazing. I love playing New York. It's one of my favorite cities to play, and turnouts are insane. The venues are great, and in general, the people are really nice. So I love going to New York. And the same when St. Vitus opened, I remember being like, this venue is amazing, you know, so it's really cool to still go and play there as well.
Well, speaking of Brooklyn shows, tell me a little bit about the one that y'all played opening up for Mr. Bungle at Brooklyn Steel, which is another venue that I certainly hope can open up again after this is all said and done. I know I got some tickets for upcoming shows I was definitely hoping to see, and I'm certainly a fan of the venue, but tell me a little bit about, I guess, playing that gig and seeing Mr. Bungle, because I got to see him on the Disco Volante and California tours. I missed him, even though I knew about the gig on the first tour. So I've been a fan of them forever. But unfortunately, in New York, these unchecked fucking ticket bots sell out shows immediately. And then you, as the show sells out, you immediately see the tickets for three times the price on like StubHub or wherever they post them.
I saw that shit. It's insane.
I was hoping everyone would tell them to fuck off and not buy into their tickets and force them to come out day of, so they could either get busted for doing that shit or just then be like, no, I'll give you $50 for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And the demographic of people there was even like really weird. It's very just like out of nowhere type of people. You just like, you listen to Mr. Bungle. This is insane. But I mean, yeah, it's really sucks that the bots went up like that and sold all those fake ass tickets. I felt bad for everybody that got ripped off.
Right. Sucks, man. Well, tell me a little bit about playing that gig and checking Mr. Bungle out that night.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I'm a huge Mike Patton fan. I even love Faith No More so much.
Me too.
Yeah, but it was, and the lineup that they had for Mr. Bungle was awesome, at least, you know, with Dave Lombardo too. It's like my right. All-time favorite drummer. So that for me to see Mr. Bungle, I was definitely like floored, and they played awesome. Exactly what I thought a Mr. Bungle set would be. So it was perfect, you know, just like a few Mr. Bungle songs, but just like, you know, like 10 covers was awesome. Everybody was just like, what the fuck is going on? But no, people really liked it. I thought Mr. Bungle was awesome. It's just really an honor to play with all of them, but for Mike Patton especially, and he's an awesome guy, so
absolutely,
it was definitely like it was definitely an honor to play with them, and it's really sick.
Well, as far as playing, I guess, extreme music, tell me a little bit about your introduction into some of those bands that might have influenced you and or let you know that this was, some of those things were even possible, because I know sort of the further you go back, if you were witnessing some of it, you know, 20 years ago, for instance, hearing it was especially jarring, and it was like, it was really hard to wrap your head around. So I'm just curious sort of about the progression of you being exposed to some of the heavier, more extreme influences, and maybe some of the drummers in particular that helped you. It sounded like you're a Dave Lombardo fan, obviously, as well.
Yes, yes. So like I'd say the first drummer I ever heard, the first band that I really liked when I was like probably like 5 or 6 is Motley Crue. So it's super into Tommy Lee.
Fuck yeah.
Just because I got my first drum set at 4 years old. So the first tape I got was Motley Crue. And that really, like, hearing Tommy Lee, that I played this over and over again for probably like 5 years of my life until finally like Dad was like, all right, I'm going to take you CD shopping. After that, he was a huge Black Sabbath fan. So Bill Ward has always been super huge for me.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a huge Bill Ward fan. And that's for me, Black Sabbath was a game changer. And for pretty much everyone, I'm sure, that plays drums, especially, it's like the first super heavy band that I was ever introduced to.
Right.
Which was awesome. But I remember going to a CD store and being like, what should I listen to? And the guy was just like, gave me a Hell Awaits by Slayer and was like, listen to this. And that's the first time where I was like, oh shit, this is the only drumming that I want to do. So after that, I was like, yeah, I know playing fast is all I want to do. So from that point on, I got the Hellfest DVD, and that really like opened a lot of bands up to me. After getting that, when I was pretty young, then probably like 11 or 12, that's what set me over the board of like, you know, bands that I really, really got. Converge for me was huge.
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
like,
man.
Ben Colder, for a lot of people I know, is a massive influence. But yeah, that was the first like kind of like mainly punk kind of, you know, crossover punk, metal, whatever. I that's the first time I was like, oh shit, this is insane. That he's been a huge influence for sure.
Over the years.
But Dave Lombardo, for that's what like set it off for me for sure.
Right. I was born in 76, so I remember like the Slayer records, and it's kind of funny, you know. And you mentioned Motley Crue, so in like 83, Shout of the Devil came out, and I remember like Looks That Kill was the video that was on MTV at the time. And, you know, it's hilarious to think that was evil. I mean, literally, there were Christian and conservative groups claiming that listening to that would make you worship Satan. Like, and they look like a bunch of like trans women on. It's like, it's hilarious. Or like drag queens or something. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
So it's just like, when you think about that being a threat, you got to realize like, oh my God, can you imagine if those people are still around, if they hear the shit some of us listen to now, what they would think about that? My
yeah,
God.
The Vince Neil cameos are really awesome nowadays, where he's just very sad, and you know, just got like the double chin. He's like, shout out the devil.
Right. Oh my God, I know. Yeah. Oh my God, dude. Yeah, you mentioned Dave Lombardo as well, and I mean, I definitely remember when it was really crazy, because once again, MTV, when I saw the video for the title track, Seasons in the Abyss, and they were playing like near pyramids, and Dave Lombardo had sand coming off of his China symbol and shit. I was just like, what? Are you kidding me, man?
Yeah. So say it's all, you know, I mean, just metal in the desert is awesome. So it's perfect, you know. I remember the CD that I had got from Hell Awaits, actually, it had like a, you can put it into your computer and it would like pop up and give you like an option to save the screensaver. So I remember putting on my parents' computer the Slayer screensaver, where it's just like the guy's carving Slayer into his arm. And my mom was so worried, you know, because I'm like the last hope of my family. So she was so worried that, you know, like, this is it. He's going to end up turning up bad, just like the rest of them. That's it.
Oh my God, that's hilarious, man. Well, are you do you have siblings, or are you an only child?
I have one brother, and that's it, but he's much older. He's like 40 years old.
Gotcha. Right on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm older than your brother, man. So you're a youngin'.
Damn. Yeah. I'm 26 actually. Yeah.
Oh fuck yeah, dude. I'm 16 years older than you.
Oh, perfect. That's awesome.
Old enough to be your father, dude. Respect your elders.
I know. I know.
Oh my God, man.
I'm trying. I'm trying him. Another dude that's a huge influence for me was Mick Harris, actually, from Napalm Death.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I definitely emulate him a lot, especially. It's probably the most, like, the biggest comparison I get, like, nowadays, at least, is Mick Harris. Early Napalm was just like, you know, a huge staple for me as well. That's probably the next thing after Slayer where really it was like, all right, like, this is blast beats, and that's all I want to do.
Right. Yeah, it's funny, man. I wasn't super, super into Napalm. I might have had a cassette tape, and I would just kind of laugh at how absurd and how quick the songs were. They were really one of the kind of first bands that I recall that would took kind of the punk rock format and then just doubled the time, and then you had blast beats and, like, the intensity of all that. But in watching the videos and listening to your music, and I've seen y'all live, that is an influence as well that I thought was probably there. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely a huge influence. And for me, actually, it's the mid-air albums like Harmony Corruption that I'm really, like, you know, into, actually, where it's more of, like, the death grind kind of stuff. But uh-huh. I really like early Napalm Death, where it's, you know, obviously the shorter, more punky songs, but I don't know, the crossover, the death grind albums for me are definitely the best era of Napalm Death.
Right. And it's funny, man, I kind of went a long time even without getting super into the sort of prototype, like, death metal that was around in, like, the early 90s, for instance, like, even like the band Death, or, like, you know, Cynic was obviously more fusion-y, but then you still have Sean Reinert on both.
Yeah, he's an amazing drummer. I mean, he's a huge influence actually for me too. I mean, definitely, he's a game changer, especially everything that he incorporates with it.
Absolutely, man. You know, another band that plays some super blasty, kind of crazy, sort of Napalm Death-esque stuff was The Locust. Did you ever get a chance to see them live and see Gabe Serbian playing drums with them?
No, but that's another huge, especially from the Hellfest DVD. It was a huge influence for me. I really like The Locust, and I never got to see them live, but man, live videos of him is insane, especially to play with the get up on and everything.
Right.
And
totally.
That clean, his linear fills and stuff. It's really awesome. I definitely love The Locust.
Absolutely. So I'll tell you my Locust story. I've told it a few times, but it bears repeating. I didn't know anything about The Locust. I had never heard of them. Didn't know about their get-ups, as you said, nor their music. Nothing about it. This was a long time ago. I think this was probably 2004 or something like that. And my buddy had the newspaper or the local zine that just gave a rundown of bands to check out at South by Southwest. And he was like, man, look at these crazy fuckers. We should go check them out. And we drove from New Orleans there, and we were partying the whole time. It was so ridiculous. And we were literally, and you know, you can't, in New Orleans, you could drink on the streets. So we were like, fuck it. So we cracked some PBRs that we had in our book bags, and we're smoking weed, and watching The Locust, from the street. You could see into, I forget which club it was. And the kids, their kids were just like, y'all can't be doing that. That's insane. And meanwhile, we watched them come out, and we were just, me and my buddy, who was also a drummer, we were looking at each other just going like, I can't even believe I'm seeing this shit right now.
Jaw drops.
Oh my God. It seemed impossible. Impossible.
Yeah. 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 I mean, they're definitely a really interesting band. One of the bands I really like, especially from the Hellfest DVD, that I was like, oof. Them and Dillinger Escape Plan as well. When I was younger, that was Chris Penny is.
Oh, he's the man.
I mean, that was like the best era. I really enjoyed him, and he game changer. I don't know. He taught me a lot of stuff, basically. You know?
Absolutely, he's a guy that I'm really hoping I can talk to one day on this podcast. I saw, speaking of Mr. Bungle on the California tour, another story that I like to tell. I saw Dillinger open for Mr. Bungle on the California tour, and it was like, I got there early to get a spot because it was as small as at the House of Blues in New Orleans, so it was a small club. And I was there, and I saw Dillinger, and I was absolutely not ready for that. I was just once again like, well, that's fucking impossible. I could not believe what I had seen Chris Penny pull off. And the intensity of that band, period. And nobody knew who the fuck they were. Everyone was there to see Mr. Bungle, and they just came and leveled the place. And then, of course, Mr. Bungle came out and played quite possibly one of the greatest shows that I've ever seen in my entire life.
I never got a chance to catch Dillinger, but I really wish that I would have. Being younger, there's a lot of bands that I missed out on.
Yeah.
But we were actually supposed to play one of their shows itself. It was one of their last ones. But they're definitely a band that I wish that I would have been able to catch, you know, while they were still active.
Yeah. I've seen Dillinger to my last count 15 times.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, there are videos of them, obviously, being younger. I was like, this is insane. Like, people are like, you know, head walking, stuff like that. I mean, it's
totally
fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. You know, Dave Witte is a huge one for me, at least. Discordance Axis was getting into grind bands. That was probably and still is my favorite grind band, at least. I love that band. And him, especially my style, I mean, all single bass blasting completely. He's an amazing drummer.
Absolutely, man. I interviewed him. Did you catch my interview with him?
Yes. Yeah, I listened to that, actually. I really like that. Also, the Chris Maggio one was really nice, too. That's an awesome interview. Yeah, both guys that I think amazing drummers.
Totally. And it was so funny that they both know each other and are both from Jersey.
Yeah, I know. Everything comes full circle like that.
Right. No, man, I'm glad you checked out the Chris Maggio one, man. I'm a huge fan of the Trap Them record that he played on.
They have a Good Luck With Drummers. They have a lot of the records, and it's cool. Like, I think each drummer shines in a different way. So
totally.
That band's really interesting for me.
Absolutely, man. I love the one in particular that Chris played on, and there's some crazy footage of him playing live at St. Vitus, and they're playing those songs a million fucking miles an hour, man.
Yeah, we actually played one of the shows at St. Vitus with him. I think that he was also he was playing drums for that show. Insane drummer. He's so good, it's ridiculous. And especially during Trap Then, when I feel like he was at his like most ferocious. Yeah, that's amazing drummer.
totally, man. I also interviewed the drummer after him as well, Brad Fickeyes, and it was cool talking to him, because I talked to him on one of Trap Them's last three shows, two of which they played Vitus, and I talked to him at one of those. But it was great catching up with him as well.
We played a lot of shows, actually, ended up at least at the end of Trap Them, and Brad's a really awesome guy. I love all those dudes. And that band was really great. You know, it's sad that they came to an end, but it was definitely an awesome band. Really catchy D beat stuff that I really liked, and every drummer they had, I really enjoyed. So, awesome band.
Absolutely, yeah, man. One of my favorite shows that I ever saw of them. I'm trying to remember. I think it was the first of two shows that they played two nights in a row at St. Vitus, which was one, one of the last three or whatever. But because the vocalist Ryan McKinney had a propensity for beating himself up so much, it was actually interesting seeing them only play three shows when he was especially in good physical form from not just being totally beaten up. And I tell you what, man, I just sat in the back of the club and was in awe watching the intensity of that. It was fucking incredible.
He beats the shit out of himself. It's insane. I mean, even the shows we did with him, like, he was definitely just like bruised up and bloody every night. It's awesome. I know that there's no other way that he can play, which he says, which is amazing. I'm just like, hey, keep fucking yourself up. It looks awesome. It's sick. But when he broke both his legs, that was insane. I was stoked that they just kept playing, just like sit in a chair. That's fine. I was like, oh, God, you're a badass. And when we had toured with him, he had said that he had actually took out all of his teeth himself so that he would be able to get insurance or something somehow, which is insane. I just imagine him ripping his own teeth out with pliers. yeah.
What the fuck?
The dentist wouldn't take his teeth out, so he had to do it himself. Oh, it sounded so gnarly, what he was saying, to taking shots of whiskey and doing that. Oof.
Oh, my God, dude.
Definitely a gnarly dude, but that band's awesome. They're such nice guys, even him. I think they're amazing people. But crazy ass dudes.
totally, man. Well, in speaking about drummers, you had mentioned earlier that one of your drum instructors hipped you to, I believe it was the Mike Mangini stuff. Tell me a little bit about some of the people that you studied with, or was it specifically him that you did, drum set lessons with?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was younger, my drum instructor was Travis Orban. He was in my area. He was like the first drummer.
Oh, right on.
Now he's in Darkest Hour, stuff like that. But he was... he was always, he's an amazing, insanely technical drummer, at least completely like ambidextrous. So it's his left and right. His setup is really insane. You know, at least like Rackham on the left,
totally.
Floor on the right, Ride on the left. I took lessons from as much as I could until my parents couldn't afford it, which eventually always happens. But then, you know, I get older and didn't need some lessons. So maybe at the time I slightly squandered it, I guess, but I definitely took it. It helped me a lot and it gave me way more of an appreciation. And later on, it really helped me because I, you know, all the techniques that he had taught me, it took some years to really like dig into my head, but I'm like, oh, okay. When you really go over shit, you're like, okay,
right.
This is what he meant, you know, and touring for me, that's really when my playing changed completely. And I think about like 10 years ago when the band first started, I was 15, the first tour we did.
Jesus, dude.
And like, I remember that my parents were like, you're not going. I was like, I'm definitely going. You guys, there's nothing else for me to do. Like, I mean, I'm like, I'm 100% going. It was my last, it was the summer before my last, or my junior year of high school. So
wow,
and it was 4 weeks long of a tour, which were like, you know, the first Full of Hell tour. So, I mean, a lot of the places we're playing are like bars to like 4 or 5 people. If we had like 15 or 20 people at the show, we'd be like, oh, that was crazy. Or like, you know, if we sold like $50 in merch, we'd be like, oh, it's a good ass night. But yeah, that tour was definitely awesome. Definitely go, like, to go on that young, touring changed everything for me. And years of that really developed at least my style. But I think also in a way it made me more uncontrolled. Like I said, I was working a lot more uncontrolled lately. In a way, I always, like, tour was my practice when I was younger. You know, I was just like, that's when I play the most, and that's when I'm going to play the most, which is not the right way to do it, but how I did it for a long time. Yeah, everything he taught me really, really helped me later on, though. Like, now I apply everything, and it's definitely helped me a lot.
Wow, man. Sounds pretty awesome. What do your parents think about all your musical endeavors? Do you invite them to shows? Do you give them the advanced listening of the records? Or are you more like, maybe you're not going to like any of this, so I'm not going to send any of it to you?
No, my parents are really supportive. They're at first, you know, the first couple tours, they're like, I almost got expelled from high school, so I had to write all these. We made all these fake contracts, and I sent it to the Board of Education, so they were forced to let me leave. So my last year, I did like I missed like 65 days of school, the tour, which they were not happy about. But the Board of Education cleared it, so everything was all good. And my parents didn't even really know about that. You know, they were like, definitely weren't happy. They weren't happy at first, but I mean, they've been supportive because they know this is all I've wanted to do. And really, drums is the only thing I've been exceptionally good at. I feel like in my life and in my family, I'm the only one musically inclined.
Same here.
Yeah, yeah. No one else plays music in like any part of my family that I can even think of.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for this, I mean, I'm very lucky to have not grown up at least all my years in Baltimore, and at least I was in Ocean City, because I wouldn't even, who knows, I probably wouldn't even be playing, like, you know, in a band or anything right now if it wasn't for moving from Baltimore to Ocean City when I was younger.
Right, right. So I take it you struggled in school. I know I certainly did, man. I bounced around from like 5 or 6 schools from kindergarten to high school. And a lot of it was a struggle. But interestingly enough, a lot of my schooling became a little bit easier to manage once I started playing drums. So I don't know if that was like puberty. I don't know if it was me playing the drums somehow gave me a different focus and a different incentive to do what I needed to do so I could go home and play every day. I still don't quite understand what it was, but I know that around that time when I first got my first drum set, I seemed to have just, I don't know, the world seemed like it got better.
Yeah, I definitely struggled in school. I was definitely like, you know, I just hated it. I, you know, as a lot of people do, I was just like, And you know, the No Child Left Behind Act got put in when I was younger. So I was just like, I can fail and just keep going. Like, oh, awesome.
Oh, my God.
So I really didn't take. But as time went on, I guess, like, you know, when I got like middle of high school, I started doing culinary and like some like kind of college courses for that almost. I liked that a lot. But that was the only thing that I ever took serious, really. in school that like I kind of really just found every way to. I wish I would have went back and did like jazz band and stuff like that, but you know, it's something that I just didn't. I just never was really interested in doing like, you know, activities and shit after school, stuff like that. I was, and plus,
yeah,
everybody at my school, I mean, teachers and stuff, there was cool people. And there's some people that I hold from high school still, but I hated everybody at the high school. I was such an asshole.
Right.
So I was really, really by the end of it, I was like, oh, cool. I don't have to see these people anymore. Like,
yeah,
peace. I could do my own thing. And I'm like, I'm still in where I graduated. I still live in that town, but, I'm gone for most of the time, you know, usually half of the year almost.
I hear you. It's funny. I graduated high school in 95, which is insane that it was that long ago, but, I've in my town in Louisiana, a lot of my friends have asked me if I had any plans, I guess, to go to like the high school reunion. And I was like, no, because, I don't want to lie and pretend that I'm interested and or hide my disgust with many of the people that I went to high school with. So I'm kind of like, more power to you. Hope you're happy. Hope it's good. But, I don't really want to fucking see most of those people.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. I mean, I kind of want to go to mine, but I think mine comes up in like 3 years or something. Okay. I believe my high school reunion.
Yeah.
I'm ready for that. I didn't get invited to the. They had a pre high school reunion. People don't usually do that shit, but yeah, they had a pre high school reunion, and I didn't get invited to that shit. I was a little salty about it.
Oh, but wow! Damn, dude.
Yeah, Facebook event.
I know, man. Well, what age were you when you moved to Maryland? Ocean City, Maryland, is it?
Yeah, Ocean City, Maryland. I would have been about 9.
Okay.
Years old. Yeah, about 9. So. For my primary years, I've been here. At least I went to high school and stuff here.
Right.
And middle school.
Well,
yeah, but most of my family's from Baltimore.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, did your parents listen to a lot of music in the household? And if so, what was it? And or did your brother turn you on to any particular records?
No, not really, to be honest. My dad was the only one that would listen to music. He had given me his like big book of CDs, which there was a lot of like different, you know, Black Sabbath, Deep Purple.
Fuck yeah.
Also it was like kind of like half rap CDs. So like when I was really young, I remember being like, you know, getting Wu-Tang CDs, Beastie Boys CDs,
nice.
All that stuff. My dad was super into Beastie Boys, and Bone Thugs and Harmony.
That's hilarious. That's what your dad was listening to?
He loves Bone Thugs and Harmony. It's like one of his favorite groups.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. The only things that he also listened to was nu metal. So like, you know, like Korn, Slipknot, you know, Limp Bizkit, things like that. My dad had, you know, passed on all these CDs to me.
Right.
Which would honestly, those things like nu metal, at least for me when I was that age, opened up a lot of new bands that I wouldn't have found if I wasn't listening to that.
Sure.
So In a way, I have respect for it. So
I hear you, man. Well, there's a noise influence in Full of Hell, and I know you've worked on a record with Japanese noise artist Merzbo. So tell me a little bit about your band and that connection, as well as are there any 80s or 90s kind of noise bands from New York or anything like that that are an influence in that regard within Full of Hell?
There's tons of noise influences in Full of Hell. But with the Merzbo stuff, how that happened, we were actually playing in New York and we had met his drummer Balazs. He's from he's from Hungary actually. In Budapest, but he was randomly at one of our shows and he was like, oh hey, you know, what's up? And we would like introduce himself and we were talking, and then we like emailed us and was like, oh, you know, the idea just had got brought up about doing a collab with Merzbo because he's his live drummer. So that for us, Merzbo, for me at least, was my like introduction into noise. So for Merzbo was huge for me at least.
Nice.
It was definitely an honor to do that with us. But we had played 3 live shows together, 2 in Japan and 1 in the Netherlands.
Mm.
The one in the Netherlands was funny because afterwards, sitting at the bar, but Europeans, like they just weren't really into it. They were like, I thought you would play. They thought we were going to play songs off the record, but Merzbo only does improvised noise sets when he plays live. So he won't play actual, you know, composed songs or anything.
Oh,
it's just
shit.
All improvised noise. So we played a little over an hour long improvised noise set, which to play drums for a whole hour like drum soloing sucks. It's miserable. And Balazs, he was playing filling in for another band. So he missed the first 30 minutes of the set. So like I'm looking and I see somebody running, like pushing through the crowd. He like ran, I don't know how many blocks it was, like a crazy 6 or 7 blocks to get to our show. And then, you know, the last 30 minutes of the show, he also played drums with me. So it's awesome to see. He just runs up through the crowd and like, you know, jumps on stage. But it's just us and the Melvins played after us. So it was a really sick lineup. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. But Europeans afterwards were coming up to be like, I thought you would play real songs, but it was just noise. Why?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They have no filter. It's fine with me. I take the criticism. I'm like, hell yeah. You know, say what you want. I'm your punching bag.
Oh my God.
But to do the Merzbow collab was definitely a real big honor for all of us. I don't know, I can speak for everyone. Yeah. It was, definitely, that was the first thing for the band where I really was, you know, jaw dropped and floored that we had that opportunity.
Right.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the last couple only in Trumpet and Ecstasy and Weeping Choir, those were done with Kurt Ballou. Tell me a little bit about working with him, because I'm really a fan of the records that he produces, be it Baptist, once again, Trap Them, obviously Converge. The list goes on and on. That Verlatek record that just put out, and he's worked with them previously. Young Widows as well, for like more spacey noise rock shit. Like, I'm just a fan of his productions. And as far as a modern guy that I own records as a producer from, it's him, man. Like all the mentions that I just gave, I have on vinyl because I dig his productions. But tell me about working with him.
Yeah, it's amazing. Kurt's an awesome guy. And what I really like about him, for me specifically, I mean, I like recording on his drums. He's got awesome drums to record on. It's definitely like a very vintage feel. Mm-hmm. But for me, he pushes me really hard to do better, which, you know, a lot of times, I like little mistakes that pop through that kind of sound cool. I'm all about that kind of stuff. But like there's a part to like a little mess up, I'm like, oh, I kind of like it, like keep it like that. But for me, he really pushes me to play everything better. You're like, no, you can play faster, or you can get this tighter. And besides that, there is little things on songs that he just adds, you know, maybe like just changes this in a tiny way, you know, whether it's just a drum fill or something that's just like a little cleaner that might flow better. He's really good, has amazing ear about that.
Nice.
Definitely. And I mean, God City has crazy equipment, and it's comfortable to record there for sure.
Right on, man. Well, as far as another project, I was hit up with a message from David Losey. Hopefully I said his name correctly. And he wanted to know about your band Jarhead Fertilizer. So feel free to tell me a little bit about that project. That's a hell of a name, by the way.
Yeah. So it's like my baby, basically. I kind of curate all the songs. I write, you know, everything. But I mean, everybody adds to that. I don't want to take away from anybody. But yeah, it's really like I've had this band, and it's been very much on the back burner because of it. We've done 2 tours or so, but it's been on the back burner because Full of Hell's been doing so much over the last like 10 years or so. But wow, I mean, I guess this band's almost been a band for almost 10 years. It's just so inactive that it's hard to keep up. But now finally, this January, recorded an LP at Developing Nations in Baltimore. And that will come out hopefully by June or July.
Okay.
It's hard to say with pressing plans right now, but that LP is called Product in My Environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's I'm really excited. It's definitely like a different sound than it used to be, a straightforward grind band, but now there's very much definitely like old 90s kind of West Coast grindcore feel, but also with like, you know, some death metal, like Mortician style parts. There's a Mortician cover on it.
Nice.
I'm excited to release it and tour on it.
Awesome, man. Well, any other plans? I know everything, as you mentioned, very tentative right now. Kind of hard to get a grasp of any sort of specificity with dates of tours returning and whatnot. But do you have anything on the books kind of far out enough to where you think that or would hope that y'all can honor it, so to speak?
Yeah, so the only other thing besides the Jarhead stuff is Full of Hell's writing now. So now we're going to start writing a new LP.
Cool.
Which hopefully we'll be able to have, who knows? I know everybody has unlimited time, so it's hard to say when things get written. But yeah, as of right now, Full Hell's just writing.
Nice.
and taking a break until we can figure out when we can actually go on tour, play a show. Hopefully by the fall. I mean, it's hard to say when things break. I don't know.
Right. Right on, man. Well, cheers from afar in reclaiming your livelihood, touring, recording, and being creative in general, or whatever the next version of that will be. Hopefully it works out for you as well as everyone else that's suffering out there and dealing with a bunch of bullshit. So glad you're able to keep it positive, practice, and man, stay sane.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you so much.
Of course, man. Good talking to you.
Hell yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope some of these conversations can provide you with some entertainment in these dark times. Hope you can find some way to make the best of it somehow, some kind of way. Stay safe. We'll catch you on the next one, and I'll keep trying to crank them out. Crash, bang, boom.